Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. A man who has tremendously contributed to our understanding of and, I think, effectiveness in dealing with various threats throughout the long history of this war for the free world is our first guest. He is Victor Davis Hanson. I think of him as the ultimate Renaissance man, a professor, a farmer, a classicist, an author. He contributes columns through National Review Online and Tribune Media Services, and it is always a high privilege to have him with us as a guest. Victor, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to start with something that you have been mulling and writing about recently for all the obvious reasons, namely the state of the war for the free world vis-a-vis Vladimir Putin, and specifically what Europe, with America's involvement, of course, NATO, is doing or not doing to deter Vladimir Putin's aggression.
Well, I think it starts with understanding what reset was. Reset was a reset of a series of actions, some of them pretty mild, that George Bush took after Russia invaded Georgia. So we initiated a missile defense project with Eastern Europeans. We cut off high-level talks. We had some mild sanctions. And then this administration felt that that was too punitive. And then by resetting the punitive actions, basically told Putin, you can go ahead. And so he quickly went into Georgia and Ukraine. What can we do now? We need to decide what degree eastern Ukraine is part of Ukraine and can be salvaged and what price we would have to pay to salvage it. And we haven't had that discussion. We have to decide what the United States is willing to do, and we have to get with our allies because they're close to it and see what they want. And then we have to have some leadership, and we have to have a national address and say this is either an existential threat to the United States or it's not, or et cetera, et cetera. But we don't know. Americans are entirely clueless about what Putin's doing and what he will do next. I'm afraid that if we just let it go, he's going to go into two countries. It'll be really Latvia, but especially Estonia, that's a NATO member, and he might do that intentionally to evoke Article 5. And if he did that, we would probably not at this point do anything, and that would be the end of NATO. I think that's one of his goals, to end NATO as we know it.
Yeah, I do too. You've written at National Review Online, Victor Davis Hanson, that only deterrence can prevent war. I'd like to get your thoughts on one piece of that architecture of deterrence that has helped dissuade aggression from the Kremlin in the past, namely our nuclear capabilities. These have largely atrophied, certainly on the part of the United States, its tactical nuclear forces in Europe and the like. Europe has its own capabilities to some extent, Britain and France. Britain may lose the base for its nuclear deterrent force in Scotland, depending on how things go there next month. Talk a little bit, if you would, about that as an ingredient in deterring a guy like Vladimir Putin.
It's very important. We should break off all strategic negotiations with Putin for one reason, and that transcends the Ukraine, and that is we have different obligations than Russia does. The reason that South Korea, Taiwan, the Philippines, Japan are not nuclear, or Germany even, and these are all countries who could be nuclear in 2 months, they have enrichment. They don't because they depend on a huge psychological edge. That is that our deterrence is so large that each country has claims on a particular number of warheads. That's not true with Putin. So in this administration talks about getting down to 500 deployable weapons, what we essentially do is with China ascendant, we say to Japan or Taiwan or the Philippines or South Korea or Germany, which number protect me and which protect him and which protect San Francisco. So we need an overwhelming arsenal that can be readily deployable just to reassure people that they don't have to go nuclear. But when this administration, after Crimea and Ukraine, continues to negotiate a reduction with Putin, who doesn't have those obligations, it's going to end up turning a lot of countries into nuclear powers and actually do the opposite of what it intended by non-proliferation, it's going to proliferate.
I couldn't agree more. My concern, frankly, is as much about the quality of the weapons. They have been obsolescing for years. Many of them were deployed when I was in the Pentagon almost 30 years ago. It's unimaginable that we've let ourselves get into this position. And I think you're absolutely right. This is a very important ingredient in being able to both deter aggression and maintain alliance relationships. Let me ask you more broadly, Victor Davis Hanson, about the transformation, a fundamental transformation, one might say, that seems to be happening on President Obama's watch. And I'm talking not just about that domestically, of course. I'm really asking you to focus on the international component of it, a new world disorder, you've called it. Give us a sense of both what is happening broadly beyond the Russia-European context and whether you think this is a function of the president simply having checked out or not having a strategy or whether there is, in fact, a, I think, malign purpose.
Well, I think what he's doing, he has doubts about the 70-year-old post-world order that was run by the United States and its allies, and he feels that it's the 1%, or it's as unfair abroad as the elite are unfair at home. And so he's outsourcing, with the abdication of American presence and power, he's outsourcing to regional hegemony. So China now is adjudicating things, or will be, in the South China Sea. Russia's doing it in the former Soviet republics. And I think the Hezbollah, Syria, Iran axis is going to do it in the Middle East. And the question then is he doing this intentionally or is he just incompetent? I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think he has a general view that the United States should withdraw from the world as at least its so-called COP. And how that happens or what the consequences are, he has no clue, but he has a general idea that what we do is either insignificant or it's negative. So if we stop doing what he calls stop doing stupid stuff, he has no idea what the consequences are going to be. He just wants us, as somebody who's morally ambiguous, to get out and concentrate that defense money, foreign aid, etc., at home for a more fair society. And then every day he gets up and he said, why didn't somebody tell me this was going to happen? Not that he cares that it's happening, just that he cares that people are angry about it. He is worried that it has political fallout.
And certainly not his fault, that's for sure. Victor Davis Hanson, again, is our guest, a professor now with Hillsdale College, the Martin and Illy Anderson Senior Fellow in Residence at the Hoover Institution, and the author, most recently, of The Savior Generals, How Five Great Commanders Saved Wars That Were Lost from Ancient Greece to Iraq. Victor, let me ask you finally, you have written very thoughtfully for a long time now about the broken immigration and border security posture and policies of this government. You made the point recently, which especially against the backdrop of what we started with, Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine, that we are witnessing an invasion of far greater proportions annually from and through Mexico. Tell us what you make of where we are on that front and what must be done.
We don't have a secure border. We don't have an immigration policy. By that, I mean literally that if you ask an immigration officer and he's saying you ask him, that foreign national who's here illegally, are you going to detain him? He would say it depends. And what we've done, to be honest, is by calling people racist and xenophobes and nativist, we have outsourced our immigration policy to the hard left wing of the Democratic Party and Latino and La Raza activists. And under racial chauvinism and ethnic solidarity, they have said to the United States, only people from Latin America are going to come into the United States, and mostly illegally, and then you're going to give them citizenship as if they were legal eventually. And if you don't do it, then we're going to call you all sorts of names that are going to frighten you so much that you'll regret it. And so what I mean by that is when the Republicans or moderates say, well, we want to have immigration reform, they're talking about something very different than these activists are. They do not want immigration reform in the sense of meritocratic, skill-based, educational-based, legal immigration. If you were to say to La Raza, or Representative Gutierrez, we want to let people come in from all different countries, regardless of race or religion or ethnic background. We want it just based on educational skills and capital or merit or whatever. They wouldn't want that because it would not fit a particular agenda. And for some reason, people are afraid to enunciate that. And the result is we have an ethnically driven policy that has rendered federal immigration statutes null and void. And it's a political act. and we need to say that, that the people who are calling everybody xenophobes and racists are themselves ethnic chauvinists. And that's driving it. The Democratic Party's desire for constituents and to slander and smear their opponents as xenophobes and racists.
To the grave detriment both of our security and our polity, it would seem to me. Victor Davis Hanson, we have to leave it at that. I'm so sorry to say. What a splendid time. Thank you for joining us. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon. Bruce Weinrod joins us. We'll drill down further on this NATO business right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.